Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. In this week's episode, I'm joined by Priya Chu. Priya is an award-winning, experienced, registered eating disorder dietitian. Priya has experience of working in the NHS and private hospitals, working with people on a one-to-one basis and as outpatients. Priya now works with clients one-to-one and in her recovery tribe group sessions as part of her private practice to support eating disorder recovery. This week, we speak all about eating disorders in midlife and how women can gain access through different communities and empowering each other to find joy in the little moments in life, to not obsess over food and exercise, and to rediscover their life free from an eating disorder. Well, Priya, it's so lovely to have you back on the podcast. How are you doing today?
Oh, it's just so nice to be back and for you to have me. So thank you. Thank you so much.
No, it's always a pleasure. And you are one of the accounts on Instagram that I am always so happy to see posts from, demystifying everything. So I always love having you on the podcast because I know it's going to be a good one.
I love that. I think Instagram has changed, hasn't it, over time. And it's just really nice to know that people still see your posts. And I love it when I get those positive comments back because it makes it all so worthwhile.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm definitely having a gripe with Instagram at the moment in that, like, it just doesn't feel like I put content out there and it just doesn't feel like it's being seen. But then you see people that are maybe not spreading the appropriate messages and going viral and everything. And I saw that you were on the news the other day talking about social media.
Yeah, that was such a joy, such a privilege that they picked up the story around eating disorders and social media. And actually, the news presenter reached out to me directly and said, I've seen that you've posted some things on Instagram about this. So, you know, social media does work. And I'd really like to pick up the story and run with it. Would you be happy to work with me? Of course I'm happy to work with you. Like, we want this message to get out there that there is a big impact on eating disorders from social media. We want people to be aware of this. So that was a real joy to be able to do that.
Yeah. That's amazing as well that, as you said, the power of social media, because I think as I alluded to a second ago, I can be a bit of a negative Nancy towards social media and the wrong messages getting out there. But that's so amazing to hear that your content, that is the stuff I would really hope is being seen and heard, is being seen and heard by the appropriate people, and that they wanted to then take it to the next level with you and talk about that on television.
Yeah, so good. Little old me actually making a little bit of a ripple, which is what I really want to be able to do, because I'm never going to be one of these big influencers. I'm just going to be, you know, Priya over here in the corner saying her bit.
Yeah, well, I personally in this space think that you are a big influencer. So I'm a big fangirl of your work. So I guess before we go into it, we should probably, just in case people don't know who you are, and we should probably introduce you.
Sure. Yeah. So I'm Priya. I'm an eating disorder dietitian. I have been around a while. So I've been in the eating disorder field for over 15 years now, which feels like a very long time. Do you know what? I'd say I'm even more passionate now about seeing people recover than I was right at the very start. So I now work solely in private practice, having been in the NHS and having been in private hospitals and been on the wards. I loved all of that. But now I have a family and I work from home. And I really am so passionate about not just the nutrition messages getting through about eating disorder recovery, but I think eating disorder recovery is about so much more than that. It's about finding identity. It's about learning skills to deal with those negative thoughts. It's about calming skills. And we need to be bringing this holistic approach into eating disorder treatment. And that's really what I'm all about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fantastic. And I don't know when you posted it, but I saw it this morning and it was a post about like truths of eating disorder recovery. And one of them was of things that you've learned. And it was like
it's all about food, but it's actually nothing about food. And that kind of summarized it for me. And it was such a, I think often that perspective within clinicians isn't maybe understood as much as it should be, in terms of the fact that, as you said, it's all about food, but it's actually like food is just an element of it. And there's so much more around identity and struggles and experiences and things like that. So I love that perspective that you have. And I think, you know, from the extensive work that you've done, it sounds like you've really got an understanding of eating disorders and how they can impact people.
I hope so. But I'm also always here to learn mm-hmm. what I work with and to learn from the research. And I don't think we can ever say we've got things nailed. So I'm learning every day.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess like what we wanted to talk about today was a topic that is maybe not spoken about as much as it should be. So I'm really glad that we've got you on to speak about it. We're going to talk about eating disorders that are impacting women in midlife. And I suppose, did you want to start by maybe sharing some thoughts that you have around that, in terms of maybe demystifying the fact that eating disorders can happen at any age?
I think I would start with saying that as a clinician who's been in this field for a while, I certainly would have started off by thinking eating disorders only happen to people who are young. Mm. And so I think that it's not a stigma, is it? But that thought process has been around and has been in the field. And what I have been seeing significantly over the last 5 to 10 years is more and more people struggling in their midlife years. And it's almost something that isn't being talked about. So people perhaps aren't able to identify with it. They're not able to notice the symptoms, or they're feeling like, well, this can't be happening to me because eating disorders only happen to people who are younger. So there's something wrong with me. I'm broken. I'm a misfit. I think it's really important that we share this message that eating disorders really do impact anybody and everybody. And so it's important that we're open to that. And as healthcare professionals, you know, someone like me is looking for those signs and those symptoms and is open to working across the board, but then also as people who are just around other people, that we're also open and aware and supporting people and noticing these things as well. Because we're seeing in the literature that more and more people are starting to struggle later in life. And I don't have an answer as to why that is, but I do know it's something that isn't talked about enough. So I'm really pleased that we're here to talk about it today.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because, as you said, you know, I think generally we have an awareness that eating disorders are on the rise, but the kind of think the stats, or you know, the information that make it to, you know, to most people's news feeds or Instagram platforms, wherever you get your news from, is that eating disorders are affecting, you know, the younger generations, and people are getting younger and younger with hospital admissions and things. But I think that, you know, from my awareness of just being a human that interacts with people, eating disorders are impacting people of all ages. And I think one thing that I've definitely recognized is that there's a conversation around eating disorders developing when someone's a teenager and then like sticking around until somebody is then in their midlife and further. But actually the conversation around women developing eating disorders in their midlife, I think that to me feels like the element that is mostly missing. And I was wondering, you know, as you said, there's probably not one reason why, but I wondered if from the research or from your experience of working with clients, if you've seen any kind of themes or patterns emerge that might suggest why eating sort of impact people at that age, but also maybe the rise.
So I think you're right. We have different ways that eating disorders present in midlife. So we've got somebody who has had an eating disorder all of their life and hasn't ever fully recovered. And there's certainly a lot of people who are living life with an eating disorder chronically, or are in what I would call quasi-recovery. They've done partial recovery and then they decide actually now is the time to finish that off, which is so brave. And then we've got people who have a relapse of an eating disorder. So perhaps they had an eating disorder as a teenager and then they relapse later in life, and that could be, you know, decades later. Mm-hmm. And it's always worth just bearing that in mind. And then we've got people who have never had an eating disorder and have what we might term a late onset of an eating disorder. Now, the reasons, it's complicated to ever say why somebody develops an eating disorder, I think. There can be so many different triggers and reasons behind it. But some of the things that I have noticed that specifically I see in my own client base is a lack of identity is a really, really big impact. And I think that this happens because life changes when you get into those midlife years. So you might have children who are leaving home and going to university. You might have a change in jobs, for example. You might go through a big relationship change. There can be all kinds of different things that are happening which actually cause you to think, well, do you know what? I don't know who I am anymore. Life is changing. I've just had somebody I was working with and her whole eating disorder came on in midlife, and it was because she didn't know who she was anymore. She didn't know whether she was needed by her family because they were all older. And they didn't seem to need her. And then her job changed as well. And she was like, yeah, I don't know who I am. I don't know how to dress anymore. I don't know how to act anymore. And food was the thing that she was able to control. And that did give her that safety net. So I think that can be a really big trigger. But then also another massive trigger is how women's bodies change in midlife. And we have perimenopause and menopause as being big topics that are being talked about at the minute. We know that there are, I think almost, we laugh in our house that hold that in perimenopause, like everything is a symptom. So women's bodies can be massively impacted, whether that's a physical symptom, a psychological symptom, an emotional symptom. We've got so many changes going on in our bodies. And when you feel out of control in that way, maybe you've got like tinnitus coming on and joint pain and your body is changing and your mood is all over the place, it is understandable that you're looking out for something that's going to help you feel safe somehow. And so again, an eating disorder could be triggered through that. And I think as somebody in that place, I can completely relate to how this could just come on without you even realizing. And then we've got diet culture. So I think midlife women are very much targeted through social media and through advertising. We've got years and years and years of diet culture messages just being there in the background. You know, somebody who is my age, I grew up in the 80s and my mum was on a diet every single week and that was just normal. So when I hear about cottage cheese, that instantly takes me back to diets back then. So if you have grown up in that, and then you're getting to that place where your mum was when she was potentially doing all the diets, mm-hmm. Again, there is just this link in our mindset sometimes. So I guess how I want to frame it is that there needs to be an awful lot of compassion for anybody who is going through this, because it's so relatable and understandable if you are in that place.
Yeah, I'll be honest, as somebody that is in eating disorder recovery, when I think about menopause and the conversation around menopause, it terrifies me because it feels as though it's an experience that is so out of your control and things are changing. You know, you hear stories of people waking up one day and they look in the mirror and think, what the hell has happened to my body? And also, you know, if people have come from diet culture and have always relied on those particular behaviours, then you get to a certain age and those behaviours, you know, aren't doing the same things anymore. I can imagine that is quite an overwhelming thought. And I can understand why eating disorder behaviours may rear their ugly head, or, you know, it may be something, maybe you've kind of existed not engaged in diet culture and then it comes to a point where you feel that you can. So it's, I guess it makes logical sense that that may occur, but equally I don't want that to be the logical sense, because I don't want, you know, it's it almost annoys me that it does make logical sense, because that just shows how ingrained diet culture is in, you know, our identity being defined by the way that our body looks. And I guess maybe my question would be, have you got any thoughts there in terms of, because I think that there's often conversations around like, oh, you just have to, you know, step into it and embrace the body changes and things like that. I think that's easier said than done, as you've, you know, pointed to diet culture. It's so ingrained, especially if, you know, your mum, I know that my mum, her mum, when you said cottage cheese, I giggled, because that's exactly what my grandma was like. And my mum always tells me a story of my grandma would eat these toffees. My mum would be like, oh, can I have a toffee? And she was never allowed one. And it was because they were laxative toffees. And it's just how normalized all of that was. And so I understand why now, when people that are in their midlife are going through the menopause, that feels like a natural crutch to almost lean into, because that was what they learned when they were children.
Yeah. And I think so many people in midlife probably struggled with disordered eating, or may have had an eating disorder in their teenage years. I know I did. And so again, it's like we're going back to, well, that was a coping mechanism when life felt out of control as a teenager, because let's face it, teenage years are hard. So perhaps it, you know, I don't think anybody thinks it through in this way, but perhaps it could be something that's going to help me again now. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if we think about it rationally, we know, no, it's not the answer. It's not the way to be going. But it can quite often be an avenue that just creeps into life. So, you know, what do we do about it? Well, I think it's making sure we have these conversations, mm-hmm. and that we're just being really open. Being open with friends about how life is, having that support system is really, really key. Saying, you know, hey, I'm struggling right now. This is what I'm struggling with. I know I have a great friendship group actually in my Pilates studio, and I have learned so much from some of the women who are slightly older than me, who've been sharing some of their tips and tricks and how they are managing, how they are finding that things are working for them, sharing books, sharing resources. I think this open culture is really important, and we don't feel as women specifically, or men, that we have to be taking the mental load on by ourselves and just coping and getting through life. Mm-hmm. Because if we don't have coping strategies built in somewhere, then it's all going to get too much. And then we're going to end up crumbling. And I think those coping structures and that support system are two really, really big parts of the puzzle.
I think that the power of community, particularly, you know, when you're going through changes like this that feel very kind of novel or like out of your control, I think can be so, so helpful. And particularly, I liked what you said there about, you know, women that are maybe slightly older and they can share their experiences, because when it's something that's happening right now in the moment, sometimes it can also be great to have people similar in a similar experience to you, and you can be like, whoa, this thing's now happened, has this happened to you? Or like, you know, put those pieces together. But having somebody slightly older can be really helpful, but it's okay, I've was there too, you can get through this, and give you some tips and tricks about that. And one thing I wanted to ask in terms of eating disorders that occur in the midlife, I think a lot of the time when we talk about kind of physical complications of eating disorders, they're very much, again, as the conversation tends to be, it massively focuses on younger individuals, predominantly females. So, you know, again, I know that we are talking about eating disorders in midlife women here, but we also need to open that conversation up to men. But that's not our focus for this episode, so that's fine. But often, you know, we talk about things like bone health and osteoporosis or fertility and losing your period. And I just wondered, in terms of physical complications for women in the midlife, are there different complications? Should we still be worrying about things like fertility and bone health? Because I know when I was entrapped in my eating disorder, I thought that I was superhuman. And therefore, even though I've not had a period, I was like, it doesn't matter. Like, my period will come back and I'll be fine. Or I'll, you know, my bones will be totally fine. Like, something in me just thought that I was superhuman. And I suppose in that sense, maybe where my brain is going is that a woman that's maybe in a midlife will say, well, I don't want to have kids anymore, so why should my fertility be an issue? Or, you know, I'm at an age where my bones, you know, bone health is deteriorating anyway, so what's an eating disorder going to impact?
Yeah, really, really great question. I was having a little bit of a read through the research, as I do, and I came across a really interesting statistic that was talking about how in midlife, women with any form of eating disorder report more medical complications and just more medical conditions than people who are younger. And that makes sense because as our bodies age, you know, they tend to have more wear and tear. Mm-hmm. We have more problems that go on anyway. So I think firstly, when you're coming at life from that angle, you know, already you've got something rumbling on with your body and it is at that place where it's not going to repair and restore and heal as quickly. Mm-hmm. Think even about cutting yourself perhaps, you know, doesn't heal as quickly, then it makes sense that having an eating disorder is potentially going to have more of an impact on your body. So I think we've got that to start with. But then when we think about, does it matter? I would always say yes. Let's say you're in midlife. That doesn't mean you're at the end of your life. You've still Yep. got to think ahead to the future. So if you are in that midlife place and you lose your period, we've firstly got this really difficult conversation around how do you know you've lost your period? You might be on contraception. You might be taking HRT. You might be in perimenopause or menopause, and so your cycle could be all over the place anyway. So there's lots of added complications in there. So I think you can't necessarily judge, have I lost my period? That's a really difficult thing. But what we do know is that your bones are already starting to lose bone density. So you're already at that place where you really need to be thinking about bone health and mm-hmm. looking after them. So it becomes even more important to be putting that work in and thinking about protecting your bones, eating, exercise, and doing all of those things. But it's not just bones. So if we haven't got a period, then it's not just osteoporosis that is the risk. We've also got higher risks of increased cholesterol. We can have impacts on your triglycerides, which are the fats in the blood. And we've got an impact on cardiovascular disease as well. So we've got this heart health concern. So I think if anybody's thinking, oh, well, why does it matter? Well, you know, think about 20 years. And I say this knowing that almost everyone I work with goes, oh, it's never going to happen to me. This is always the phrase that I get. It's never going to happen to me. I love that thing where you said you've got a superpower, because I quite often use that phrase. Mm-hmm. If you have an eating disorder, it makes you feel like you have a superpower.
Yeah.
But in 20 years' time, are you going to be thinking the same thing? If it's increased your risk of osteoporosis, if it's increased your risk of impacts on your heart, is it really worth taking that risk if your body is not healing and repairing as it might have done in your younger years? I don't think it is. How we get that message through to someone who is really struggling in that moment and who may have their brain and their cognitive function impaired because they're not nourishing themselves adequately, I think that's the really, really hard bit.
Random tangent, but really interesting what you said about healing and recovery, because it made me think about me and my dad had a tattoo together, and just completely random tangent, but his tattoo took about double the time to heal compared to mine. Yeah. And we were like, I wonder why that is. And I was like, oh, wait, it's probably because you're like 35 years older than me. So that was just like a real life example of the body just taking longer to heal. And I was like, oh, that actually is really interesting to think about in a wider aspect. Anyway, random tangent aside, something that kind of came to my mind there, because I completely hear what you're saying in terms of, you know, it's important that we're not engaging eating disorder behaviours because of the impact that they can have on our body and physically on us. Where my mind instantly went was, okay, so that's maybe talking about things like restriction, you know, if we're thinking about anorexia. I could see that this could be a massive trigger for something like orthorexia to develop, because thinking, you know, I've got to eat in a certain way that is like extraordinarily healthy to ensure I'm getting all my macronutrients, all my micronutrients. You know, I can't be eating certain types of fats. I've got to be focusing on protein, like lots of different things like that. And then also bringing in that element of exercise in terms of, you know, I've got to exercise in order to sustain my physical health. You know, I think it's so tricky, isn't it? Because exercise is can be so good for your mental health as well. But finding that balance of doing that in order to promote health rather than to also impact your health, that to me felt like something that would be quite difficult to navigate in terms of when there's all those different markers that you're trying to support yourself with.
I think women right now are being so heavily marketed to. It may just be me. Perhaps it is just me.
No, I agree.
In terms of you need to eat this perfect diet. You need to meet your protein goals. You need to have these supplements in there and you need to be doing this specific type of training. And I don't know who has time to fit that in and run a household and go to work and nourish relationships. Mm-hmm. So my message would be there is no perfect and we've just got to do the best that we can. Go right back to the basics of what does my plate look like? Have I got a bit of carbs? Yeah, great. Are they brown or white? Who cares? Let's try and get a bit more brown in if we can. But you know, what do you like? I like white pasta. I don't like brown pasta, so I eat white. That's fine. Put some vegetables with it. Okay, there's some balance. Have I got some protein? Yes. Does it look like it's about a palm size? Yeah, okay. Job done. Some fats. Okay. I think we are at that point of really overcomplicating nutrition. Yeah. And that does me a disservice as someone who spent 6 years at university and is constantly learning in terms of nutrition. On the one hand, nutrition is not complicated or it doesn't need to be complicated when you're just giving yourself food on a day-to-day basis. On the other hand, when we go deeper into it, yes, it is very complicated. But I don't think that everybody needs to make it overcomplicated when they're feeding themselves and their families at home.
Yeah. It's really interesting that you say that because I think this was an episode a couple of weeks ago now, but I did an episode with a sports dietitian and we were talking about things like supplementation and what have you. And he spoke about the pyramid of needs. And fundamentally, if you're not getting enough energy in, nothing else matters above, you know, thinking about the like different types of nutrients, then thinking about your macronutrients, then thinking about supplementation, thinking about the type of training you're doing. If you're restricting your body for its total energy, those things aren't going to have an impact anyway. And I think it's the same thing here. I feel like in society, everyone is so caught up with, I've got to get enough protein. Like that is everybody's key, is getting enough protein. Fundamentally, and this may have changed, but when I did my master's, that was the one nutrient that people were not malnourished on. People are okay with their protein.
Yeah, generally people are. We know from like National Diet and Nutrition Surveys that people tend to be hitting their protein. It's not really an issue and we don't need to be overdoing it. It's just expensive nutrition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And then things like supplements, you know, there's, and I think I have ADHD and the talk around like ADHD and the menopause and then supplements and nutrition, it's a very big piece. And I, you know, maybe nutrition and supplements can really help, but I think it's putting so much pressure on women that are going through a stage of life where a lot of things are changing anyway. And as you mentioned before, you know, identity is shifting and, you know, a lot of things are changing. Do we need all that other pressure to be perfecting our diet and the food that we're eating and the supplements that we're taking? I think, as you've said, you know, yes, nutrition is a complex thing, but actually just taking it back to the basics is probably the most important thing that you could do for yourself.
I think if you can really strip things back and do almost a little audit, you know, where is life getting too complicated and how can I simplify that? If you can focus in on simple nutrition, and I don't mean that you have to be growing it all in your back garden and cooking it all from scratch, although I'm a massive fan of gardening, but you know, just making your life as simple as possible, batch cooking, those types of things. Our dinner tonight, every Thursday in our house, is the favourite meal of all my children. Do you know what it is? It's jacket potatoes, baked beans, cheese and salad. How tragic is that? That is meal when I spend hours cooking other things, but they get very excited when it's that meal. And it's the simplest thing. We don't even cook them in the oven. We use a pressure cooker to cook them because it's our busy night, one of them. They're all busy. But we don't have to have these perfectly beautiful balanced, you know, plates of food with pomegranate seeds over the top and a drizzle of balsamic. My food never looks like that, I'd like you to know, but I am known for making delicious food. I think we've got to just, you know, bring nutrition right back, and that might mean that it's a bit boring sometimes. Mm-hmm. That's okay. Then really focusing on, am I getting enough rest? How am I going to get that downtime in amongst all the chaos of busy life? So one of the things that I'm known for is that every weekend I have to go outside for a prolonged period of time. So everybody gets forced to go for a walk, no matter how much they're mumbling and groaning, and that happens quite a lot. Or I have to be gardening, or we have to go to the beach. There has to be that time because that's one of the ways I know I recharge my nervous system. And I have to go outside and get daylight every day, and I force myself to do that. So are you putting things like that into play? You know, have you got enough time to actually see friends and to have that community around you? I think when we take life back to these simple, simple things, it helps us to just stay connected and to stay grounded. And that's really, really important. When life feels out of control, we can turn to food as one of the first things to be about control. But actually being grounded and connected to other people and grounded and connected to ourselves is so key. And it's the same with exercise. We don't need to overcomplicate exercise. It can literally be a walk and using whatever you've got in your house. Yeah. It can really be that simple. So I think we've just got to this place where it's become this big spiral on social media. And I'm a huge fan of, like, let's just make it real. How can we be as realistic as possible? My house is a mess. Mm-hmm. My breakfast looks like this, but it's okay. This is normal.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's nice that we've done like a full circle back to social media, but I think the pressure and the just lies of how people's lives look, I think that's why I'm a big fan of your account, is because it's very refreshing in terms of it's authentic. You know, you don't kind of put things on there that look super posh and fancy. It's real, and that's exactly what that's I think why, you know, I connect with you so much, because it's, you can see that in the content that you're putting out there. And I think in terms of, you know, what you said about, you know, you kind of said those three main things, like nutrition, rest, and then community or connection. And for me, I'm exactly the same in terms of getting outside. I always thought that rest had to be sitting on the sofa watching Netflix. And actually, that is really, you know, sometimes that's resting for my body. But in terms of my mind, that's not where I find rest. And that is why I'm so excited for my holiday tomorrow, because it is just going to be engaging myself in nature, getting outside, and like you said, just really recharging your nervous system. But also that connection piece, I think, is so important. And when we're kind of, you know, running from one thing to the next, whether it's kind of, you know, maintaining a family, maintaining a household, going to work, have you, that connection, that authentic, like true connection to friends or family can be lost because it's just so quick. And so actually, I think, you know, if you take away all the noise on social media and you just focus on simple nutrition, getting outside, and engaging with your community, obviously that would be lovely if you could just say everything else needs to stop and I'm going to focus on these three things. I'm not saying that that can always be possible, but I think, as you said, in prioritizing those three things to make sure that you're at least getting, you know, those three things in your day-to-day life, feel like will help ground you so much and, you know, manage moving through this different period of life in a better way.
And I think for anyone listening who's thinking, well, that's all very well to say, but actually I can't do that. Like, how do I put that into play? I hear you. Mm-hmm. You know, I have six children. I'm running two businesses. And when I talk to my friends, they're all saying they feel like they're on a hamster wheel. going round and round and round and round. And we find it quite difficult to find time together to connect. But that can be a quick 15 minutes. It doesn't have to be prolonged. And I think it's just trying to find these ways to connect with people. I quite often say to my husband, he'll say, oh, how was your day? I'm like, I went on the school run, spoke to nobody in the playground. I came home, I sat at home, spoke to a few people on social media, did some work. I went back to school. Like, I've seen nobody today. And I wonder how many people feel disconnected in such a busy world. And I think that that can also be part of the problem when we've kind of like lost that connection to people. We've lost that side of us thinking, you know, how can I find ways to plug myself back in and find those people who are around me? Because the people who I come across, who I work with, they're very lost. They can be quite lonely. And I get that. I get how that happens. You know, when you are in midlife, let's also think about the fact that you've got children perhaps at school, perhaps at university, perhaps not at home at all, but then you might also have older parents who you're looking after. So you're caring in multiple different ways. There's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of push-pull. So I think that's why this type of conversation is really important. And we somehow need to take away this shame around support only being for people who are young. You know, I can't reach out to my GP because what are they going to say? How do I even start the conversation about this? Who do I go to? I have got, I would say, probably 50% of the people I work with right now are in those midlife years. I've actually got some people in their 70s who are working on recovery. And whilst that sounds sad on the one hand that, you know, they're in their 70s and they have an eating disorder, I think it's really incredible that at that point they want to start working on recovery. So this this thought process that actually recovery really can happen at any point in life, and it's always worth persevering and going for it again or trying a fresh approach, because when you actually get through the other side, it is revolutionary. It's going to make such a big difference. I've got a lady, she's actually the lady who appeared with me on Saturday, and she has just done so much work on recovery. She's in midlife. And, you know, when I say to her, what's the difference? How would you describe it? And she literally says that her life is different. She sees life through a different lens. And I think that is just great. She's like, I can socialize, I can hang out with my family, I don't have to think about it. It's just okay. I can enjoy it. I can go to church things and I can have a biscuit at the end of the church and I can stand around and chit chat with people and I can do all of those community things without fear and without worry. I think I just really want to spread that message that recovery can happen at any point of life. And it's always worth going for it. Sorry, I'm a bit passionate about this.
No, it's actually really funny that you say that, because as I was making my coffee before our call today, I was thinking about how funny it is that in recovery, or for me anyway, the biggest thing I was terrified of was change. And I was like stuck in the eating disorder. I was like, I don't want to do recovery because I don't want anything to change. Which is funny when you look back, when I look back now, because everything needed to change. And actually, I was thinking about how it's a terrifying concept when you embark in recovery. But actually, for me, nothing has really stayed the same. There's the core components of things that have stayed the same. Like I still have the same parents. I still am in the same relationship. However, my relationship with everything that I come across has changed dramatically. I said to my partner the other day, I was like, genuinely, I feel like I'm in a new relationship with him because I'm so different. I'm so much more excited, so much more engaged. My communication is so much better. We're going out on dates and I'm actually excited for the date rather than thinking, what am I going to have to eat? How am I going to look? What am I going to wear? My relationship with my parents has changed. Rather than me being a child that they're looking after, I've noticed more that they're coming to me with concerns and issues that they have and they're looking for my support. My friendships have changed. My work life has changed. My relationship with exercise has changed. So all those relationships have changed, which sounds so scary. But as your client so nicely put, like, you can go about these things without fear. You don't have to be worrying about things. And I think, you know, often you could say, when people say like, oh, I can have a biscuit at church, for example, it feels like such a small thing, but actually it means that you can go to that gathering, you can engage in the conversation, in the talk, you can listen without thinking, at the end of this talk, I've got to eat a biscuit and I do not want to. And that over consumes your mind, but you don't even have that thought. And then you just have the biscuit and you don't even think about eating the biscuit. And then, you know, sometimes you might walk away and think, I just had that without even thinking. But that's about as far as it goes. And then it's, you know, gratitude that you can now do that. And mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a reflection I was having. If you'd have said to me before I embarked on recovery, your relationship with everything is going to change, I'd be like, that is terrifying and I don't want that. But now that it's happened, I'm like, that is the best thing in the entire world that could have happened, because now I'm so much more connected, I'm so much more engaged, and I'm just excited to do things rather than being terrified of every single thing.
Mm. You can, you know, I'm just reflecting that we are all terrified of change.
Mm.
As human beings, we mm-hmm. have a fear complex. We have our lizard brains that are just petrified of change, and we have to show our brains that things are safe by mm-hmm. doing them over and over and over again. So we have the biscuit and go, look, it was all right, you can do mm-hmm. it again, it's going to get easier, it's going to be better next time. So I think it's natural that we all fear that, but hearing that your whole life is going to change, you know, your whole perception, that is super scary. One of the mm-hmm. biggest questions people sometimes ask me in clinic is, what will life be like once I've done this? You know, it's not just what will I look like, yeah. but who will I be? And that is an exciting thing on the one hand, like you almost get to find this new version of you, or go deep and do that work and say, you know, who am I? What are my core values? Actually, what do I stand for? Yeah. But it's also deeply petrifying.
Yeah,
I think anybody who does this work is so super, super brave. But having these stories of actually it was for the better,
mm.
they can be very empowering, aren't mm. they? Very good to hear.
And I think that one thing I always like to say is that, you know, if I woke up tomorrow morning and everything could change, yeah, that would be like intense. That would be like, whoa, like, why have I got this new body? Like, how, why do I feel different about my body? Why is my relationship with my partner different? Why have my friends, why am I not now talking to some people, and actually connections with other people have flourished? But it doesn't happen overnight. It's a long process, and that in itself is hard, because it means every day waking up and committing to that change and committing to something that's actually very uncertain. And that in itself is really, really scary. And I, you know, completely hear that. So I think that's something like really important to reflect on, is have compassion for yourself that it is scary and that it does take a long time. It's almost you want it to happen quickly, but also you don't want it to happen quickly. But in a weird way, I think, like, looking back on my journey, I didn't enjoy recovery at all. You know, it's a long, arduous process. But actually, reflecting now back on the journey, it's been an incredible time to build self-awareness and to build that identity again. And as you said, really think about those values that I hold, what is important to me rather than what was important for the eating disorder. So anybody that is thinking about recovery, I think two things. One, you know, you're extremely brave and it is possible and there absolutely is potential, but it's also never too late.
Yeah, it's never too late. And I think it's always worth it. We are constantly updating ourselves and changing anyway as yeah. we go through life. Like, I'm not the same person I was when I was 20, that's for sure. And, you know, my body, my face, they do not look the same as when I was a teenager. And in a way, you know, when I look at my 14-year-old now, she looks very much like I did. I keep saying, you're going to end up looking like this. One of the things I love about her is she's like, yeah, I know. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's exactly what I say to my mum. I'm like, if I end up looking like you, I will be over the moon.
So if you think about how your body, your mindset, your relationships, just you as a person have changed and matured as you've got older, you've been through so much change already. So we're just talking about another little bit of that change. It certainly is something you can do, a step-by-step process. It doesn't all have to happen at once, but it's so key, isn't it, to have someone alongside you who's holding your hand, who you can trust, who, you know, will just be that rock for you. I had somebody come back into clinic yesterday. She pops in and out every now and again when she needs support, and she always apologizes about it. And I'm like, no, I love this. I love that I'm the person who, when you're struggling with something like this, you can just go, oh, I'll just book a slot with Priya. Yeah. And I'll bring her all of my questions and my concerns, because I know that she'll help me work it through. I'm like, use me in that way. That is exactly.
That's my job.
What you need to be doing. Yeah. So having that support system, that community, you know, I'm the Recovery Tribe, where we work in community. And the difference that I see through that is just humbling is the word I would say, when I see that actually it's not about me at all. It's about bringing people together who are all suffering in different ways with different types of eating disorders. They're in different stages of life. In one of my groups recently, I had someone in university and somebody in her 70s, so very different stages of life, and yet they were able to support each other and help each other through the next stage of recovery. And I just think that that is so, so powerful, when you know that you're not alone and you're not the only one who's suffering.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you know what the really funny thing is the week that this podcast is going to be released is Mental Health Awareness Week, and the theme of this year is community. So we've actually nailed it, because without even knowing, you've brought up community. So that is just tip top. So thank you very much for that. But I completely agree. You know, I think everybody has their own experiences in life, don't they? And through that, we can all help each other. So yes. Thank you so much, Priya. I feel like this episode will be so empowering for people. And, you know, I know we're speaking about women in midlife, but I think it'll be empowering for anybody, because, as you said, we're all going through change. And I think the concept of, you know, how to navigate change remains consistent at whatever age. So where can people go to find out more about you?
Sure. So you can find me pretty active over on Instagram. So I'm at Priya_Chu. You can pop to my website, which is dietitianuk.co.uk, or you can drop me an email. I'm always open for chats and for collaborations and to just be around as a listening ear. So I would love to hear from anybody who just wants a chat. I would love for you to connect over on Instagram. And if you're interested in working in recovery and group coaching, then also check out the Recovery Tribe, which is on my website.
Amazing. Thank you so much again. It is always, as I said at the start, a pleasure to chat to you. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode. So be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.